2 years ago, I had the pleasure of spending an hour with my next guest in a New York City studio, preparing an hour-long interview for a holiday edition of our program. Oh, my, what a different world we find ourselves in today. Rabbi Sharon Kleinbaum, leader of New York's congregation Beit Simchat Torah, is in the city. I am in Louisiana. But as the Festival of Lights gets underway, I'm delighted to welcome her back to State of Belief Radio, even if from afar. Sharon, welcome.
Thank you so much. It's so good to see you, and I'm so happy to be with you today.
So what has this year been like for the populations that you serve?
You know, I think back to a year ago at this time, we knew we were in the midst of many plagues a year ago at this time, the plague of racism and of hatred and a political leadership in this country, which was corrupt and honestly evil in its treatment of so many people in our country. But we didn't have the imagination that another plague would be upon us, which would leave us in this remote world of technology and isolation. So for my community here in New York City, we were hit very hard, very fast with this virus. And the first 2 months of March and April and into May, we were in severe lockdown. Many people in the community were sick. Many people's loved ones were sick. We immediately had to pivot to doing funerals, Shiva Minyanim, on Zoom. Funeral homes here were so backed up in those early days that they had to have trucks, freezer trucks, to hold the bodies. And we had to wait days sometimes to bury someone. It's inconceivable that this would be the case, and yet it was. When we were allowed to go to the cemeteries and bury a body, we were given 10-minute slots because the staff of the cemeteries were so overworked that we had to get in and out in 10 minutes to accommodate the just the numbers that had to be buried. So New York City was hit very hard, very fast. And in those first couple of months, the community I serve, Congregation Beit Simchat Torah, we, like so many religious communities and so many other institutions, pivoted to an online world. We immediately started teaching classes online, services online. We divided up our entire community so that a call was made every week by another member of the community to check in and to see how everybody was. We have a significant number of older folks in the community. So there was a lot of fear and anxiety, and we were thrust right into the center of the heat in those months of March and April and May.
Yeah.
And we learned a lot about ourselves, but honestly, because we're the LGBT community in New York City, and we have many non-LGBT members in our community, we have lived through a plague before, and we were able to reach into our experiences of living through and dying and grieving and mourning through the years of AIDS, that honestly, I think our community was well equipped to respond quickly and with compassion and creativity and humor, I might add, to our prayer life, to our study life, and to our life cycles. So in the many months since then, the community has, you know, really, like so many of us, we've been muddling through, I would say, trying to support each other as the ups and downs have continued on this long-term road. And we're now facing, as we all know, a very difficult winter. A very difficult winter, and we feel it as the days get so short, the long nights and the cold here, and unlike where you are, I'm sure it's quite cold here. So the move to go inside, it's much more difficult to see anybody outside or go for long walks outside. It's all the outside things that saved us are less and less accessible as the cold and darkness descends. So I would say it's been a journey, but like all religious journeys, there's great truth in it, and with a sense of connection to community and to God, we strengthen each other.
Sharon, I have the sense that groups of people with shared values have grown closer even as they socially distance from each other. I just wonder, I got a sense of what you were saying, that that's true there. How much has that been happening in New York during the COVID crisis?
You're absolutely right. We have more people attending everything we do. And of course, it's easier to do it via Zoom and Facebook and Vimeo and all the technology. But I think it transcends that. People are being open and quite vulnerable. I teach a Psalms class 4 days a week. We're in our 35th week of a morning Psalms class. 85 people are in this class. Every morning, 4 mornings a week, studying the book of Psalms. We started at 1. We're doing it the slow way. We're now up to Psalm 13 after 35 weeks. So we've got it. We're going to be doing this to get to 150. You know, it's going to be a few years. But it's been so deeply moving. And so many people have joined the community because there's a place in which they are accepted fully and wholly. And I mean this across all sexual orientations and gender identities. But also the ability to be together, even though we have, as you said, the social distancing, but the spiritual connectedness is even more meaningful at this moment.
Well, you didn't say it, but I've got to say it. Also contributing to that is a really good teacher who knows what she's talking about and knows how to relate.
Well, thank you for that. I have to say we have a group of teachers at CBST, and I have a wonderful team of leaders who have really stepped up, both our lay people and our clergy, and people have really just jumped in. And I said at the very beginning, honestly, in 2016, on the Friday night service after the election, that our job was now to build an ark like Noah built an ark, and to survive the tsunami that is about to come at us. We need to build an ark, but different than Noah, we need to make it big enough for everyone to be on that ark. And only if we're on this ark together can we get through the raging waters of what we're to face then. Little did I know we would also have this pandemic, but I think that still remains true. And I believe we're on that ark together for all over the country, and I think we're starting to see the possibility that of hearing there might be dry land out there. And we got to hang in there, continue treating each other with justice and compassion and love and patience. And I think we'll get to that dry land.
Sharon, would you say there's one lesson that you've learned or insight that you've gained from this unwanted experience that you consider particularly valuable?
You know, it'd be hard to limit it to one. I think if I had to, I would go to the theme of this holiday of Hanukkah, actually. One of the themes of this holiday of Hanukkah is resilience, the ability to not just focus on being defeated, but to limit the distance between getting knocked down and getting back up again. And over again, we see that life knocks us down in all different kind of ways. And can we have a spirituality of gratitude and of blessing and of being aware of blessings so that we can have the resilience to get back up again? And, you know, this holiday of Hanukkah is all about that, the resilience, the ability to believe things can be better no matter how bad they are. And, you know, the big miracle of Hanukkah is that they had this very little vial of oil that was only supposed to last for one night and that lasted for 8 nights. So the miracle is not that the oil lasted that long, I think. The miracle is that somebody had the chutzpah, you know, had the nerve, even though they were told by everybody, you don't have enough oil. Why bother light it for one night if it's not going to last for all 8? And you can imagine the crowd, right? And 90% of the people there said, let's not even bother. It's not going to last. But somebody had the dream, had the strength, had the imagination to say, you know what? Despite these odds, I'm going to light the light. And then somehow trust that there will be others to light those future lights. And that's what I believe we need to get from this time, this message of this holiday, which is no one can do everything. Everyone can do something. And maybe if you light your light it will be enough for others to light lights to come, and then you're going to be dependent on those lights that the others are lighting. None of us can light all 8 lights alone, but I can do my light. You can do your light. And maybe if people see our 2 lights, they'll be inspired to do theirs, and the world will be have a little bit more light in it than it does right now.
As much as things seem different today, the traditions and teachings of this time of the year in the Jewish tradition have endured through much, much greater turmoil and tragedy. And I can't help but believe that is a source of real comfort for you.
Absolutely. I keep telling our people, and I have for many years, we have to remember we're not the first, and it's happened worse to others. And even in our generation, it's happening worse to others. And we have to keep a perspective on that as well, and our ability to imagine what would our ancestors or those who went through so much trauma to come to the shores of America, what would they be saying to us? That we should give up or give in or say it's too hard? I don't think so. And I think we have to have the voices of our ancestors in our ears all the time. And imagine those who went through so much trauma. What would they say to us if they could come into our lives right now in the middle of what we're going through? How would they respond if we said, "Nah, you know what? I'm just giving up."
What would the teachers of ancient times be telling us about the challenges we're facing?
I believe from my tradition they would say the following. It is our job, like Psalm 92 says, to express gratitude. And we're told in Psalm 92 to express gratitude in the morning and to express gratitude at night. And our tradition says that the morning also means the morning of life, when we're young and full of optimism and think the world is full of limitless possibilities and all is good. When we're feeling that energy, we have to have the discipline of expressing gratitude. But we're also supposed to do it at night. When we're in the later parts of our lives, when we've lived more in the past than we might in the future, when we have a lot of disappointments and regrets, we're supposed to exercise a discipline of gratitude then too. And to do it both when we're feeling optimistic and also when we're feeling burdened by the defeats in our lives, the exercise of gratitude is at the essence. And I think that remains true. It was true thousands of years ago, and I think it's true today.
As divided as our nation feels right now, I recognize there are many ways that we are united in the face of the pandemic and other challenges in ways earlier generations could not have imagined. Do you have thoughts on that, like shared values, technology, basic needs met, safety net for most. What do you think about that?
I am very hopeful that when this new administration begins on noon at January 20th, we can start deep and thoughtful conversations about how do we create a world in which the pain that is clearly part of our nation is respected and supported, and we also find ways of interacting with those differences in a new way. We have to come up with new ways. The old ways are not working. And I'm looking forward to be part of the voices and hopefully joining with so many across this country that lead us into a new way of being with each other and refusing to let disagreements turn into the violent hate that has become so dominant in our culture. And this is going to be top of all of our agenda.
So what do you want the people in your congregation to keep in their hearts as they endure this dark time with a spirit of light and of hope? In other words, give me your message of what this season is all about.
The word Hanukkah itself means dedication. To rededicate, and it's about rededicating a holy space which had been made dirty by evil. Well, I don't think there's a more powerful image that faces us today. We are faced with the job to take holy spaces from the White House to the Congress to the streets of our city to the ways that people of color are treated, to the way immigrants are treated, to the borders of our country. We are faced with having to rededicate these places, both the physical ones and the spiritual ones, and clean them out and rededicate them with a commitment to justice and light and compassion and patience and love. That's our job. It's been done before, and I believe we have it within us to do it again, with God's help.
How do you do the blessing of this time?
When we start lighting the candles of the menorah, we start with one candle. And there's a very famous debate in Jewish tradition. Should we start with eight and go down to one? Or should we start with one and go up to eight? Starting with eight means there are 8 days left of the festival. Starting with one meaning, obviously, we're increasing. And the rabbis of 2,000 years ago debated this question and decided the answer is we start with one and we increase to eight because we should always dedicate our lives to increasing the light, not decreasing it. So we're supposed to do whatever we can each day with our lives to increase the light in the world. And it can be very small. I mean, a small Hanukkah candle is very small little light, but it models for us how we can every day increase the light in the world to be the reason that other human beings believe in the goodness of people. We don't have to wait for big change to happen nationally or internationally to be able to do that. Each of us, every single day, can be the reason that another person believes in the goodness of people. Increase the light, one small flame at a time.
Rabbi Sharon Kleinbaum is the longtime leader of Congregation Beit Shemkat Torah in New York City, a community that truly lives out the principle that all are welcome and all are welcome every day. Sharon is a good friend, and I think we are not together enough for me.
Indeed.
Because when I am with you, I am inspired by what you're doing. I learn from you, and I feel like you are a real sister on the journey.
Thank you so much. I feel the same way about you across the miles and across the internet. My love to you and all of your loved ones.
Well, happy holidays, and
thank
you so
you
much
too.
For being with us again on State of Belief Radio.
My honor.